Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden, and I'm working
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
All right, everybody. Chuck Bonnewell, Julie Hayden here. Truth Straight Up, brought to you by
Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture and Chinese Medicine, HappyTrees.co, and Denver Cenogenics with Dr. Julie McCallan. Lot to talk about today, as always, but we're going to go first to the sunny shores of California, where Colorado's RNC committee person...
Committee man.
Because
there's a committee woman. That's right. You don't have to call him a committee person.
It's standing by, he squeezes in between New York Times interviews, all kinds of other interviews.
Very important things.
Good for us and all you guys listening out there. Hey, Randy, how is it going out there?
Well, good afternoon, everybody. Can you see the glorious spot they have stuck me in?
It snowed here again, just so you know. Yeah.
What did you get back?
RNC, depending on. So, big election coming up this week. What can you tell us? How's it looking? What's going on?
Well, I've got a Twitter poll running right now that's been viewed about 120,000 times. It's got over 22,000 votes. I'll pull it up here in a second and just update those numbers if they've changed. But it puts Harmeet in at about 74%, Mike Lindell at about 25%, and Rana at about 1%. So the popular vote, the populist movement says a change is necessary, and the vast majority of those people responding are saying Harmeet is the change.
Wow. They don't get to vote.
RNC men and women are not necessarily reflective of the country at large any more than Mitch McConnell is reflective of the country at large, or in fact, most of the majority of U.S. senators. What's your feeling talking to other RNC people?
Well, it's going to be very interesting. I'm taking a fishing trip tomorrow with the Wyoming contingent.
They're a fun one.
They've come out in full support of Harmeet Dillon. I know Arizona, other locales have. The people are just getting into town today. I came in early thinking we were fishing today, not tomorrow. So I really haven't had a chance to talk to a lot of people. I have had a number of phone calls, and clearly Ronna McDaniel has a significant portion of the RNC already sewn up, people who gave early commitments and early endorsements. Whether that will change over the course of the next few days, I don't know. My response to everybody, Rana, Harmeet, Mike, has been that I want to hear everybody out. We have two and a half hour candidate forums. I know there'll be individual one-on-one meetings and other opportunities to meet with everybody. And I want to talk to the committee before I make my commitment. I will announce my vote before the vote on Friday. So you know, people don't think I'm just jumping on the bandwagon or something, but I want to hear everybody out, man. That makes sense.
Let's get the details official. When is the vote? Yeah, when will
vote is in an open meeting Friday. I imagine there'll be a ton of press conference coverage. They'll likely be played on C-SPAN or I don't know what channels will have it, but the actual vote will be on Friday. So it's why there's a lot of time. Friday morning. The meeting ends by 1 or 1:30.
Oh, so noon. Well, let me just a technical question and then want to get, because I know you only have a few minutes here. But so let's say that Rana or nobody gets enough on the first round. What happens then? Do they drop people off or what's the, because I know you try to figure out Colorado's procedures and it makes your head spin, but what's the procedure there?
I have not seen the rules for the Friday vote. What I expect is that after the first vote, let's say the statistics on my Twitter poll actually mean something.
Okay.
And it's, you know, 74-21 of the opposition vote for Harmeet. My guess is on a second vote, a lot of those Lindell supporters would flip their vote to Harmeet because it's clear that that Mike doesn't have that momentum.
Well, would they need it? I mean, would they need it if they had 74%? Wouldn't that end it?
No, what I mean is 74-25 of the opposition to Rana.
So he's saying, your poll is. What about their stuff? People are tweeting stuff today that Trump apparently is endorsing the guy, Mawatli, who is Ronna McDaniel's handpicked vice chair, right? So is that reading the, well, it's not even reading the tea leaves. That seems kind of obvious there.
Well, I don't know. If Trump wanted to make an endorsement, it seems like it would be easy. Now, I'm a fan of Michael Watley just individually. I haven't decided who I'm going to vote for co-chair. That's what he's running for. And there may be completely separate reasons why President Trump has endorsed Watley, but is staying quiet in the chair race.
That's a good point.
But I don't know.
Okay.
Okay. So for a Diet Coke plus a penny, who is the DNC chair?
Do you mean the RNC?
No, DNC.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. No. I know. We were talking that. We have no idea. Who cares? They're losers. Anyway.
It's amazing how the Republican ones, huge controversy. The chair of the DNC is Jamie Harrison, the famous Jerry Harrison from South Carolina.
He's Barack Obama and the deep states.
I've asked a lot of people to I should know.
I thought you were asking me to predict the outcome here, but you know the Democrats,
it's like Colorado. Everyone knows who's the chair of the Republican Party, but nobody knows the Democrats.
And let me just say this: the Democrats have learned how to do everything they need to do with or without their chair, with or without their party. The dark money, the big money that pours in, the ballot harvesting, they have figured all that out. And,
yes,
and
that's they have.
What I'm looking for is a chair to look at what the Democrats are doing and teach us how to do it better.
Yeah, really. What? How? Talk a little bit about, because this has become significant, and I think normally it hasn't been an issue, right? But I think we do have this. And I know you've got to go in a second, but this ongoing battle between sort of the populist movement or the Make America Great Again movement, whatever you want to call it, and the more establishment wing. Although I think Ronna McDaniel will try to say I'm not establishment, but what? How do you see this? You know, the division there, and how does it feel like there?
Well, when you have a chair who's had three terms and we've just barely took the House back, but otherwise kind of diminishing returns each election, who made a commitment to run for three terms only.
Two terms.
No, three terms. Oh. This would be her fourth term if she.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that for somebody like me, the Tea Party guy, the guy who got up off the couch, 12 years ago and has been trying to change the Republican Party, those are strong strikes against the incumbent.
Yes.
And then as far as the difference between Harmeet and Mike Lindell, I think Harmeet has just done a masterful job of mobilizing Turning Point USA, Charlie Kirk, the young leaders in the Republican Party. And taking advantage of her connections, Fox News and other media that she does pretty regularly. And I'm a little surprised that Mike hasn't done more of that because he's got, pretty good access to platforms himself. So it's and Harmeet has put forth a plan that you can see and you can read. And I haven't heard that from the other candidates yet. Not with such specificity anyway.
Well, so, I think your polling is probably very correct.
With people.
Well, with the rank and file of the Republican Party. It's time for a change. And the sad part of the party is the donors who have bought of their influence and so forth. No, there's no time for change. We have to go back and get all those promises from her now. I think it'd be a real detriment to the Republican Party if all we end up with the Max again.
It's the same old
McDaniel, McConnell, McCarthy, nothing changed in the Republican Party. Always the same. Neither good nor bad. Just the same awful people.
And I know, Julie, you're trying to be conscious of my time, and I'm good for a little while, so I can stay.
You just let me know. Okay.
Yeah, I will. So I agree with you, Chuck. When a football team loses for several seasons and has diminishing returns each season, usually the coach goes, whether it might not have been his fault, could have been a bunch of injuries, could have been people who played well in college and suck in the pros. but you've got to start at the top. So Rana, to earn my support, would have an awful lot of work to do.
There's a reason why in wars, if a general isn't winning, they dump him. And as Napoleon said, I'd rather have somebody's lucky than good, which means that you have to have success, or your army gets ground down and you need somebody new to bring that new vigor to it. And I'd be happy with either one of them.
Harmeet or Mike?
Yeah. And I think Mike would shake things up more, so I'd be more for him. But Harmeet is at least showing, as you point out, she's got a plan. She's got other things, but certainly a lot more than the incumbent has, who is, you know, she's always saying she's down at, you know, in Arizona doing what?
Spending money.
Yeah. Yeah, at the shopping center. I mean, you know.
So has that been a factor there? I mean, there have been reports coming out about, you know, lavish spending by some of the RNC people. I'm assuming not you. Have you been?
It's the donors. They're all on influence, these people.
Is that being talked about that at all or responded to? Or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's in, and I always try to be fair, you know, and I'll play devil's advocate when I'm asked questions like this, because I think people want to know the other side.
Right.
Donald Trump's campaign manager responded to the spending accusations and said that a lot of the spending that Rana was asked to do was asked specifically by Donald Trump in the White House. There's a White House fund. Harmeet's response to that is there's a separate column in the budget for the RNC for White House requests, and that some of the spending that's been complained of was not included in that. So that's some of the information I want to get to the bottom of. But Chuck, back to your point, the you know, look at the energy that the Deion Sanders brought to see you.
Yeah.
And I'm not comparing, you know, as a super mega talent like that to any of our candidates for RNC chair, of course. But new leadership, new blood, the grassroots enthusiasm that seems to be behind a change, we'll lose all that if we move forward with Rana.
And we have here in Colorado, we're a month away from, you know, having a new one, and our present chair is decided to drop off, which, thank God for that. Will we get anybody better? I don't know.
It depends on
the but at least we have some hope.
There'll be some
changes. So I think, I'm not sure how much RNC people feel that. They feel the grassroots. I'm sure if you get together with the Nebraska people, they overthrew the establishment. One of them people overthrew the establishment. So those would be friendly ones, but obviously there are a lot of other ones out there.
Well, and coming home to Colorado, what the heck do we have to lose by what we've had over and over and over? And, you know, and without intending to criticize Christy Burton Brown with this statement, if the same people who told us that we've got the dream team to actually win in Colorado are funneling the money and making the decisions for our next round of elections, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse. And we're never going to do well until we get ballot harvesting, voter ID, and all of the other nonsense that was started in Colorado.
Right. Why would, though, Randy, in talking with you here, and I think it's just so significant, your Twitter poll, you know, of just people, that it's like no one would vote for Ron McDaniel practically. Who would vote for her there? I mean, among the RNC people, what would a motive? Because it seems
Republican woman, probably. Well,
Vera Ortegon has come out in support of Rana. She did it very early. And I think a lot of Rana's support were people that Rana went to early to ask, you know, if I decided to go for a fourth and final term.
Final.
Would you support me? And I think the argument is continuity leading up to an election that Rana has done. She's raised more money. She's been the most litigious chairman. She's opened community centers. She's done centers. She's done things that that a lot of the 168 appreciate and think have helped the cause. But, you know,
well, the cause is to get people elected.
I know.
That's the cause. Yeah. The cause is not to raise all the money you can, to open centers all you can, to do something else. It's to win elections. That's the cause. And so she hasn't helped the cause.
She's not the main cause.
She's been doing things. That's fine. But let's have somebody. I mean, I can figure, you know, I know more about ballot harvesting than 99.9% of the Republican Party. And I can figure it out. But they just seem to be lost. Just
and I want people in leadership that will listen to people like you and people like me on particular issues.
Right.
Right. Well, what do you, so you don't, I guess you probably don't have any predictions now, but it seems like the people who are the committee people like you, right? Is there a term limit there, or some of these, have some of those people been in there forever, or what's, how does that
be in there for?
All right.
Oregon has been in there for a long time, but you're elected every,
And I'll tell you, based on the pay rate and the benefits, very, very expensive to actually do this job. But no, there are no term limits. It is up to the central committees of each individual state to decide who their leadership team is going to be. I haven't decided if I want to do this job again, and fortunately don't have to till next year. But there are people who have been here a very long time, and there's institutional knowledge that is valuable.
Right.
But if they're stuck in the old sort of George Bush, Mitch McConnell way of doing business, Haley Barbour, his name has come up quite a bit, and Henry Barbour, his son.
Right.
Right.
We see where that has gotten us. And it was only a disruptor like Donald Trump that gave us a breath of fresh air one time, 2016. And look what they had to do to take him out and try and make sure that doesn't happen again.
Right. And they're still doing it. Right. Well, do you get the sense that Ronna McDaniel gets it? I mean, she's losing, but she does seem to say some of the right things. And, and then some other people criticize Harmeet Dhillon, saying, hey, she's just another sort of establishment person hiding as so it's hard to sort out who's really going to do what they say they're going to do.
Well, Ronna McDaniel was Donald Trump's handpicked person to run the GOP after he won the nomination and the election because of what she apparently accomplished in Michigan and brought Michigan home for Trump in the 2016 election. He supported her reelection the subsequent two terms. This is the first time he stayed quiet on that issue. Yeah. So, I wasn't around then, and I don't know what those people knew or thought at that time. But I know that the momentum from the outside, the populist movement that fuels my interest in continuing to fight for this party, is not behind Ronna right now. And she hasn't said or done anything, I think, that would change that.
How big a deal is this? I mean, sometimes, like you said, we couldn't even name the DNC chairperson. And granted, it's a different kind of organization, and they work differently over there. But how significant do you think this is? Or is it the kind of thing you guys all vote and then we all go on and it's kind of business as usual no matter who's there? Or could this be a sea change if there is a change?
Well, it's one of the reasons I still remain interested in hearing what Mike Lindell has to say, because a disruptor, someone who came in and unafraid of press responses or ticking off the big donors and not being able to, woo them back with a new kind of plan. I'd like to hear some of that. And in Harmeet's defense, she's been here a while and she's a litigator. She's lost a lot of shutdown and COVID and election cases as I have.
Yeah.
But she's also the only person I know who's taken three of them to the Supreme Court and won.
Yeah.
And so that's a record of success and running a large organization or legal nonprofit that gives me some hope. But I know that she's not, the rock rib Tea Party constitutional conservative patriot like I am either. So, and maybe you don't get everything in one bite.
Right.
Right. Right.
Well, I think it could be a sea change. If people can understand what it takes to win elections where the Democrats have gotten through COVID or through shenanigans or whatever else, ballot harvesting and everything else. I mean, you have to understand that because if you don't, you're never going to win any of those elections. I mean, I've emphasized when people tell me, oh, Colorado's become California. And I say in 2014, we took all the offices in Adams County. We took the commissioners, we took the treasurer, we took everything. 2018, we lost all of them by a massive margin. What's the difference between 2014 and 2018? Isn't people moving in Adams County? In fact, the people moving in Adams County tend to be more Republican in Reunion and other places. It was all because of ballot harvesting. And yet the Republican Party of Colorado, no matter how many times, you try to tell them, and now you know, you get people like Wadham's going, oh, it makes no difference. I didn't, you know, you go, man, you can't be this stupid. You have to be under the pay of somebody. You can't. So unless somebody, and it's got to be somebody new, because clearly Ron McDaniel doesn't get how to win elections either. And so maybe, I mean, you're right. Army Hillen, I don't know. You know, she could just turn out to be another Ryan Call or everything else. But at least you got to try. You got to try with somebody new.
And she is certainly using language with that interests me with regard to her approach to upcoming elections, that you don't wait until 6 months before the election. You don't file the lawsuits,
after
the fact, that you get in there early and challenge where you can and strengthen and send the resources to the right place. I don't understand the lack of resources that were pulled, right, or the lack of resources that were permitted to flow into places like Arizona, as crucial as these 22 midterms were.
Well, and McConnell did that. He took money from Arizona and he took it away from Nevada, shoved it up to Alaska, just to make sure that he had somebody who was going to be a weak Republican, but one of his people. I mean,
from the RNC standpoint, I didn't hear anybody in leadership. On my radio show, I was pounding on that poor old guy. Mm-hmm. But I didn't hear anybody at leadership saying, no, this is wrong. We can't protect McConnell's fiefdom. We have to protect the Senate majority or reclaim the Senate majority. And that's concerning to me.
What about, no, it's a secret ballot, right?
It is.
So I'm going to ask a mean question. I know you don't know the answer to this, but so all these people that Rana lined up early on, I mean, is it possible there could be some surprises there, or is that now not how it works there?
No, I think it's that I've heard several people make that comment, including candidates, that people who committed early and now are hearing. I mean, none of us, and I've only been doing this a couple of years, but nobody's ever had this kind of onslaught of public contribution to the debate about an RNC chair. And so I'm hopeful that some of these people who remember why they were elected and who they were elected to represent listen to that. And I guess even if they have to change their vote secretly and still maintain face with the current chair, that if that's what they feel is the right thing to do, that they do it.
Have secret ballots in this case.
Exactly.
Well, and I mean, and as you said, she lined up some of the support, I think, before other people had announced, right? And so that's kind of, well, let me just a final couple questions is, you know, just your final thoughts on that. And then again, let you know, you'll be talking about all of this on your show on Saturday, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Whatever fun stories come out in the next few days. I am an open book when it comes time to get in front of a microphone. So my show is 5 to 8 on 710 KNUS, 5 to 8 PM. And that should be really fascinating. And, you know, we'll know who the leadership is and what our next focus needs to be after this thing on Friday. And I hope that the people get heard. I think that will make a huge difference for the Republican Party.
I think so too.
Well, don't fall overboard. I think it sounds like we need you, so don't fall overboard.
The fishing trip on the big, huge yacht with the prostitutes and everything else. You know,
everybody who's cold, just inhale that and
thank you.
I'm here doing what I can for y'all.
All right. Thanks, Randy.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
See you later. All right. There you go. Randy Corcoran there, Colorado's Republican National Committee person, voting Friday. We've had a ton of comments, guys, and let me see if we can get some of them. This is from Jacob. McCarthy is going to have to help the Republican grassroots. McCarthy will have to shut the government. Oh, they're talking about the debt ceiling.
Yeah.
From Dr. Donna. She's related to Mittens. And I refer to her as Ronnie. This is from Jacob. Bed Bath & Beyond is afraid of Lindell. Yeah, they shouldn't have canceled him, should they? Then Dr. Donna says maybe KKB wanted to wait and see. And then Jacob, Blake could win Arizona only if Sinema stays independent. Well, we'll be staying on, obviously keeping on touch on that. They have, I think, a debate or a forum, I guess. It's a sort of a debate Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And then the vote itself Friday morning. So we'll know by Friday the show. So we'll keep you posted on that. Wanted to switch gears, though, now and talk about the ongoing like deep state, but Tucker Carlson calls a permanent Washington attack on Joe Biden. Poor Joe Biden. People are only supposed to ask him questions about, like, you know, what did he have for in his hamburger? What kind of ice cream is he eating?
And well, instead, but nobody can have watched the last 2 years when Biden's had, you know, the withdrawal from Afghanistan, the open border. I mean, things that are incredibly COVID. Important. COVID. Yeah, COVID. You know, and
I
get
asking about that
and be absolute puppy dogs. And now all they do is hound them.
Right.
And you kind of go, when did Obama give the order?
That's right. So I want to play. We've got a bunch of sound that I want to play. The first one, though, it's just kind of fun. I mean, this is Adam Schiff, right? Who like has lied through his teeth about everything. If you're Joe Biden's press secretary, you're like, what? Get that guy off. This was Adam Schiff earlier on MSNBC Morning Joe. If we could please play Thomas the Schiff soundbite.
Schiff.
Eddie, you're a perfect person to ask this question. If we searched your home, if we searched your properties, if we searched your cars, if we searched everything, would we find any classified documents there?
No, you wouldn't. And it is a real problem that these documents are somewhere they shouldn't be. I have a deep concern over any time we discover that they're classified information and materials anywhere they shouldn't be. And I am so careful when I leave that skiff. I'm careful when I go into it. I literally pat myself down to make sure I've gotten rid of all my electronics and very careful not to take anything out of the skiff. Now, look, I'm glad the president is fully cooperating. That's what he should do. That's what he needs to do. But the fact that there are, additional documents now in a place they shouldn't be, we need the intelligence community to do an assessment, just as I urged with the documents in Mar-a-Lago, and make sure that there hasn't been any compromise of the information.
And what he's talking about there is, so these are documents that from when Biden was a senator, and as Ted Cruz has explained.
Well, but, so they just said they're from a senator and vice president.
But the new ones were from when he was senator. And the, apparently, if you're a senator, you don't get to like have, if you want to look at classified documents, that's the skiff they call it. It's a room you have to go into, and it's secure, and you can't bring it out. So he's saying that's problematic.
Now, this is a guy who's willing to lie repeatedly about classified documents. Say the classified documents say A. When Nunes says there, it's really B.
Right.
Well, about Russia, about everything. To say he has secret information about this, that he lies, he lies, he lies. And now he's, I wouldn't have him close to me. You know, I pat myself down so I make sure when I lie about it, it gets out.
Because we're going to get into this. They're taking out the president. We're going to kind of go into who I think is taking out the president. But if you're the Biden team, I mean, first of all, they couldn't have been handled worse. And I got to think anymore that's on purpose. It's like, so the FBI finally gets around to searching his house for 13 hours. It's like, and then drip, drip, drip stuff comes out. That should have been done early on. So it's almost like they're setting him up to do things as stupidly as possible and to every day have to come out and say, I have no regrets. And then more documents are found and then it's even worse. And now you got Adam Schiff, you're right, who would have zero qualms about going out there and lying. I'm saying, yeah, this is a real problem. This is a real problem. And then MSNBC, then this other soundbite, they're interviewing. So no more Biden people are going to go on camera, I think, anymore. Senior advisor, Ian Soames or Sames, and they grill him. I mean, they ask him repeatedly how the documents get there. And he tries to give the standard answer. Well, Joe had chocolate ice cream and they refused. So if we could
please, he takes it very seriously.
Yeah. If we could please play the MSNBC soundbite.
Okay, Ian, the question though I'm sort of stuck on here is I understand that there is an investigation, there's a limit to what you can say and all that. But there are obvious possibilities here as to how in the world this could have happened. Are there any that you can share with us?
Well, again, I understand you're asking these questions, but we want to be very careful to respect the investigation of the DOJ.
And I mean, that just went on and on. Normally, they would be like, of course, we can't even. And then instead, they asked him repeatedly, and he kept saying something stupid like that.
Well, what he should have done is go on air, give an address to the American public, and say, there's been a typo. There's been a typo. I said, I want you to know that I take taking classified documents very seriously, with a comma. It should be, I take classified documents, period. Seriously.
Well, but, and here's the thing. It's because we all know this, and we've talked about this a little before. Obviously, the deep state, the what Tucker Carlson refers to as permanent Washington, D.C., has decided that Joe Biden's got to go. They're throwing him under the bus continually. It's got to be. And meanwhile, his chief of staff is leaving. He sees the handwriting on the wall.
He's like, oh, yeah, hey, get the hell out of there, buddy.
And this is from Jacob. Tucker Carlson has to keep saying that Watergate was a hoax and the CIA operation. I read somewhere. Oh, we're going to get to this, Jacob. This is perfect. I read somewhere that Woodward does not have a degree in journalism. No. Chuck's been doing research and was brought up from the classified section of the Washington Post to do. No, he came from the intel community. And then this is from Stephen. Why isn't the special counsel doing the investigating and the discovery of the documents? The fix is in. Yes, Stephen, that's a perfect point, because here's the deal. They're letting Biden's lawyers search. Then they go in and search, and they're never going to try to prosecute Biden, right? They're just going to torture
That'd be so
him.
Unfair.
Yeah, I mean, they have no intention of actually building a case against him. They're just going to drip, drip, drip until he finally gets the message and announces he's not going to run again. That's
and then it'll all disappear.
It's going to disappear.
But today I did check into, because I listened to
Carlson's stuff first. Okay. Because the only other thing I want to say is back to what you said at the beginning. It's not, and don't be fooled by the media. They have not suddenly turned into true journalists anymore. Like Chuck said, they're not asking questions about Afghanistan. They're not asking questions about COVID or the border or oil and gas or egg prices. They're not asking
inflation.
Any questions about that. Nope. He gets a pass on all of that. They're just, somebody told them, put the pressure on Biden, that somebody being the deep state. And I think what's alarming is, you know, like today's conspiracy theory is tomorrow's fact. And what we used to think, you know, it's like, no, that's no. That. Even I don't believe that, right? All of a sudden you turn out, boom, that's true. So Tucker Carlson has been talking a lot lately saying, hey, this is not the first president that they've taken out. I mean, he's flat out said, and, you know, this is mild compared to what the CIA did to Kennedy and then what they did to Nixon. So if we could please play the Tucker number one soundbite.
Point, permanent Washington is in charge. It's not the democracy you imagine. We're seeing that now. So if you want to understand, if you really want to understand how the American government actually works at the highest levels, and if you want to know why they don't teach history anymore, one thing you should know is that the most popular president in American history was Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon. Yet somehow, without a single vote being cast by a single American voter, Richard Nixon was kicked out of office and replaced by the only unelected president in American history.
And he goes on to talk about, so why and who would do this? Why would they? So Richard Nixon had won by the biggest margin ever, apparently, right? So, and he's right. You look back through history, like, no, he was a criminal. He was a crook. And he's like, no, at the time, he was the most popular president ever and still remains, I mean, having been elected. So why would somebody want to take Richard Nixon out? Well, here's Tucker Carlson, soundbite number two.
Richard Nixon believed that elements in the federal bureaucracy were working to undermine the American system of government and had been doing that for a long time. He often said that. He was absolutely right. On June 23, 1972, Nixon met with the then CIA director Richard Helms at the White House. During the conversation, which thankfully was tape recorded, Nixon suggested he knew, quote, who shot John, meaning President John F. Kennedy. Nixon further implied that the CIA was directly involved in Kennedy's assassination, which we now know it was. Helms's telling response, total silence. But for Nixon, it didn't matter because it was already over. 4 days before, on June 19th, the Washington Post had published the first of many stories about a break-in at the Watergate office building. Unbeknownst to Nixon and unreported by the Washington Post, four of the five burglars worked for the CIA.
Now, there you go.
There you go.
And then it goes on to have, he says, a series of reports issued by Bob Woodward, who I always assumed was a journalist, right? But it turns out, no. And you did some research on this.
He went to Yale undergrad, where he was English lit major. He was a Navy ROTC, and he spent 5 years in naval intelligence in the Navy. He always says, oh, I just carried around classified document. I didn't really do much.
Left him in Joe Biden's garage.
No, he said, I met Mark Felt. I was over, you know, currying some documents over and waiting for somebody to pick
and
him
Mark
up.
And Mark Felt is?
Mark Felt is Deep Throat. was there, and he introduces, you know, Woodward said, I'm looking for mentors. I mean, that's like a gay deal or something.
He's a young naval guy.
Yeah, and a uniform. And so he goes, yeah, hi, I'm Mark Phelps. And he doesn't go quite how he made him a source for him, but he says he became a mentor for him. You go, you know,
the FBI.
22-year-old guys don't go around looking for 45-year-old mentors. Well, I mean, they really don't.
The FBI
does not get
our people.
Yeah.
The FBI agent is like, oh, I mean, maybe another FBI guy, but they don't find, because you said what, they met outside the White House door.
No, inside, you hand off documents, like, give this to the DNA guy or something.
So this little Bob Woodward is sitting there, and this FBI super spy guy comes up, and he goes, oh, I'll be your mentor. But then, so you think, okay, so then he quits the Navy. And so then what? Does he go to journalism school? Does he work his way up the ranks, which is normally how you do it? No.
He went to the Montgomery County Sentinel, which is a paper much smaller than the Glendale Cherry Creek News, that's out of business. And he got a job there. Now, I can tell you that at that time, in early 1970, Harvard graduate, Yale graduates did not work for newspapers. Today, some of them do, because it pays a lot more.
Newspapers.
Yeah, teeny little. You don't go out and say, oh, gee. And then he said, well, and I called Mark Felt up, asked him about going to school and going to law school, but maybe I'd be 30 and too old or something like that. And so his whole background, and then all of a sudden he got hired by the Washington Post.
Well, you said he tried out.
Yeah, it was a 2-week tryout. Yeah, sure.
You don't try out. It's not like cheerleading. It's not like lacrosse. You don't try out to be a reporter. You might have an internship when you're in college, but he goes from being a naval intelligence officer to being mentored by a super secret FBI guy to getting a job at a teeny little newspaper, suddenly trying out for the Washington Post. And then lo and behold, they hand him the biggest story almost of the century.
And right? Anybody who's ever read any of his books or know anything about him else, he can't write. He's just a terrible writer. Bernstein could write. And Bernstein had a typical background. He worked for a school newspaper. He tried to get a job for another pooper. They wouldn't let him unless he went to college for a little while. So he went to college for a little while, then flunked out, and then joined one paper, another paper, a third paper. That's journalism. I mean, it isn't. You go English lit to the Montgomery County Sentinel. It's all bullshit. It's all CIA. It looks like, I mean, not that you know, but looking at it, you kind of go, wow, no wonder he's naval intelligence. He's CIA himself.
He's still out there kind of talking, you know, on what, CNN or whoever he's on now, spewing CIA stuff. So I think what Tucker Carlson thing is okay. Number one, he says he believes that the evidence shows that the CIA actually killed John Kennedy, not as a cover up or anything like that, but they were behind it. And he said Richard Nixon knew that. So they decide, okay, we got to get rid of Richard Nixon. And then they do.
Well, but it was more complicated than that. They had to get a stooge.
Right.
So they first got rid of Spiro Agnew, threw him out. Then they put in somebody they'd never voted for president or vice president, Ford. And they got Nixon out in a 1-2 blow. And then Ford was just the usual dolt that would do whatever the deep state wanted.
And I think so. You kind of walk through the year, like you said, the Bushes have CIA ties anyway. So,
well, he was the head of the CIA.
Right.
Senior. Was the head of the CIA.
And so there you got that. I think then you have Bill Clinton. I don't know what was going on there. But then Barack Obama, I think it's pretty clear. I think for a long time, it's clear that the deep state had been working on its own against presidents. I think that with the Barack Obama, what the deep state started doing with Donald Trump is targeting political opponents. That I think they said, why do we got to wait till these clowns are actually elected? It's so much harder to get rid of them. Let's just go ahead and get rid of them beforehand.
Yeah.
And so they launched all of this Russia stuff. And did you see the news today? So the FBI agent who was investigating Trump for colluding with Russia was himself today arrested for, wait for it, colluding with Russia, right? It's like, you can't make this kind of stuff up.
He was technically accused of working for Oleg Deripaska,
right?
Who was a Russian oligarch on the sanction list,
right?
But he was the head of counterintelligence in New York when the investigation started. So, I mean, they're so rotten. They're so rotten.
Some of the comments, it's like, let's see, we had, somebody was saying, this is from Stephen Read Pat Buchanan's book on the Nixon White House years. They use the same playbook on Trump, and they're now doing it to Brandon. Mm-hmm. From Jacob, Rod Rosenstein tried to do to Trump, but Mark Felt did to Nixon. Yes. Exactly.
Yes.
And then from Stephen, Jim, I think a more likely scenario, Susan Rice gets a nod for something. She was handpicked by the Obamas to be in the Obama and Biden administration. She's calling the shots for Biden now.
Well, she's perfectly
Brandon.
Hidden. She's not going to.
Yeah, I think they're going to
keep her right there, kind of hidden.
She's going to be the spy, right? Yeah. And then
not
from Stephen,
well, relay courier the information.
Right. George H.W. Bush threatened to ruin Ross Perot financially, and that's when Ross stepped back. Of course, he'd have used the CIA to do it.
Yeah.
And then Nixon lost only to D.C. lost only D.C. and Maine in 1972. Yeah, I mean, and again, you look back on this and you're kind of like, well, wait, Nixon was bad. He was a crook. They had the tapes. And then you're like, well, wait a minute. I'd forgotten the burglars were CIA agents, right? And I had no idea about Carl Burton. You assumed he was some award-winning. He's working for the Washington Post, for Pete's sakes, breaking this massive story. And
what
we've had John,
Bob Woodward.
Bob Woodward, rather. And I was like, he has like zero journalistic experience.
Yeah, no,
but he's come from the intelligence community. So I think that what we're seeing here is, again, now I think it works okay for the Democrats. I really don't think, you know, we blame the left for stuff, but I think they're just a small part of the tent, right? I think that the deep state is this cabal of various groups. It's the intelligence community. I think it's some people on the left. I think it's some World Economic Forum people. I think it's some people on the right who all are making
McConnell,
and have power out of all of this. And they decided, just like before, remember Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are kind of doing okay. And then all of a sudden, boom, one day they wake up and everyone's like, okay, we all endorse Joe Biden. Somebody in the backroom decided that. Well, now those same somebodies have decided that Joe Biden has to go.
Yeah.
And so they're having this drip, drip, drip on this document thing. Because, I mean, to me, and you guys let me know if you disagree, but the document thing is stupid. I can't imagine that. I mean, how long ago, like, you know, my daughter wasn't even born yet when Joe Biden was a senator, right? And so I can't imagine there's anything, if it's been sitting next to his Corvette for the past, like, whatever, 20 decades, right? I can't imagine that there's anything that harmful, just like with Trump. It's all a ruse. It's all a...
Well, they said, I mean, somebody outlined how everything got overclassified. Once it got FOIA,
right,
you could ask for federal documents. The one thing you don't have to turn over, classified documents. So classify everything, and then it's not a FOIA request.
Right.
And so,
yeah, so everything is classified.
So they overclassify everything. These people say, very serious, our national secrets. What are their national secrets? Say that we're bribing Ukraine? I mean...
that China's bribing the Bidens.
Yeah, Bidens. That Biden Center is just a shell.
I can't. Yeah, really. That's hard to believe. So I think this... Keep in mind when they do this, that you got to look at who's manipulating things. What are they asking? What aren't they asking? Why all of a sudden are they asking it? And then you can look and see, well, who's really in charge? And that, I think, like Tucker Carlson said, is the scary thing. You have this permanent Washington, the deep state, the cabals there, that they're the ones running things. And they don't care that people elected Joe Biden. It's time for him to go. And they don't want to let you vote for him. And they don't want to let you vote for Donald Trump.
Well,
they want to decide who we're going to elect.
I've never been a Kennedy assassination aficionado. I mean, you know, I just always believe the bullshit because I didn't really believe that, you know, some of the people who came out with theories seemed to be pretty off the wall. But you now know that Johnson did not believe the Warren Commission. Now, no, Nixon didn't believe the Warren Commission. Why should we believe the Warren Commission?
It actually had the whole thing, right?
So there's a new book, Decoding the Autopsies, which is all about going through and how they change the ones, and it's a very lavish book and so forth. And so I've not read, I think, a single one of Kennedy assassination book doubters, I guess you'd call it. I'm reading this
one. Conspiracies.
I'm reading this one because I just don't believe anything anymore. I mean, I, you know, did we have a civil war? I don't know. Maybe we
did. Did they really land on what? Except human. Well, that I think is one of the things, and I think this is a good thing. And I think that COVID, and we have time to play the Scott Adams fight. COVID was sort of a turning point. And watching what they've done to Trump over and over, the Russia hoax, all kinds of things. And, you know, you can't, you know, a man is a woman is a man. You know, you can't tell what a woman is. All these
and
things.
If you didn't know, do not listen to Aretha Franklin's Natural Woman.
No,
that is considered offensive to the transgender community.
The M&Ms people have decided to get rid of their transgender M&Ms, and they're just going to...
Yeah, nobody wants... Do you want to eat a transgender
M&M? Turned out that was a bad idea. But the thing is I think, though, what's good is COVID opened our eyes. And I think there is a real sort of shift going on the COVID thing. And I think that, you know, now you look around and you see people wearing masks, and it's not like, oh, if you're not wearing a mask, you get shamed to death. It's like, now you look at them like, is there something wrong with you? And the same thing for the vaccines, right? Now, before there was a time, you know, if you don't have the vaccine, you know, you're a vaccine denier. You were going to kill grandma. You were going to kill the children and stuff.
Kill the teachers.
And now there are so many problems.
If we just knew, we could kill the teachers.
Yeah. No, we're not killing anybody, Jack.
Not killing anybody.
Well, the vaccines are killing people.
Yes, they are.
We're not the ones that you have to worry about.
They take the jab. They take the sentence.
That's right. And I want to play. This is Scott Adams, the Dilbert guy, who was always sort of a pro-vaccine guy, right?
On a very intellectual level.
Very conservative. And he has said, nope, I was wrong on that. If we could please play the Adam Scott soundbite. No, Scott Adams.
Scott Adams.
The anti-vax people appear to be the winners. The anti-vaxxers clearly are the winners at this point, and I think it'll probably stay that way. And I don't want to put any shade on that whatsoever. They came out the best. They have the winning position. The unvaccinated have a current advantage because they feel better. The thing they're not worrying about is what I have to worry about, which is, I wonder if that vaccination 5 years from now, because really the anti-vaxxers, I think, were really just distrustful of big companies and big government. That's never wrong. It's never wrong to distrust government. It's never wrong to distrust big companies, right? So if you just took the position, let's just distrust everything the government did, well, you won. You won. You won completely. I did not end up in the right place. Agree? You would all agree with that, right? I did not end up in the right place. The right place would be natural immunity, no vaccination.
And, you know, and I think there is a shift. He couldn't have said that. Number one, he couldn't have said that without being banned before, right?
Right.
Without being shamed, without being boycotted, without being canceled. Right. And there is a shift about it. And I think that part of it is just the evidence, and the more evidence that comes out, you know, you're seeing every day. I mean, even some of the Wall Street Journal is kind of noting there do seem to be potentially some side effects. And Alex Berenson is doing a great job exposing that the pharmaceutical companies knew that there were problems, right? They knew there were problems. And I got to wonder why it's taking so long for the Fauci files to come out on Twitter.
I'm sure they're very complicated.
And I imagine that it's very complicated, and there's a lot of stuff there about what he did and didn't know.
The thing I disagree with Scott Adams, not Adams.
I know, Scott's a golfer. I'm like, where did I get Adam Scott?
He's a good golfer. is that, you know, opposition to the RNA vaccine, because you just disbelieve anything government says, and you naturally don't believe anything corporations say. I don't think that was most of it. I think most of us early on, so they were fudging everything.
Right.
Everything was a COVID death. You know, oh, and then they found out, no, that what he could die. He shot himself. They were on a COVID death. So they're fudging all the numbers. And then remember, 2 weeks to flatten the curve.
Right.
I mean, years later, it was an emergency.
We're still in a COVID emergency.
So I think a lot of us sat there and went, well, wait a minute. If they're lying this, lying about that, if 2 weeks to flatten the curve is bullshit, why should I believe anything they say? That's it. It's not just an automatic, you know, I don't trust anything government says or big corporations say. It isn't that. It sort of is a lot more nuanced, and it proved to be a lot brighter choice. And Scott Adams is going to have to. He said, hey, is this actually going to have an effect on me? We have a friend who does acupuncture, and therefore he draws blood on things and so forth. And he said, you know, he could tell the difference between which people were vaccinated and which weren't. And they said it's kind of gooky when it came out of vaccinated people. And he'd gotten vaccinated himself.
Because he had to. Yeah, so we want to do it. Maybe I think on Wednesday we'll talk about that in terms of, you know, did you get vaccinated? And are you worried or are you glad? And didn't you get vaccinated? And if you didn't get vaccinated, why not? Because I think you're right. There are a lot of things. But the one positive thing, I mean, all the potential health issues, obviously, aside, is that I think that it opened up a lot of people's eyes who really weren't probably paying much attention. If you were a business owner just trying to go about your day, all of a sudden now you're, wait, I'm locked down, but Walmart can be open,
yeah.
Right? If you're like pregnant and you don't want to get the vaccine, you're like, I lose my job if I don't get the vaccine. And then meanwhile, you see people now getting sick and they're like, no, nothing to see here. That NFL player, I mean, who knows? But it's clear they're not doing anything to get to the bottom of it. And you got to say, why not? What is it they don't want us to know? And I think in the long run, that does a lot of good. And that's why you have things like, why are they targeting Joe Biden? Why are they raiding Donald Trump's house, right?
Here's one from Jacob. I had COVID, got over it, and the doctor said, do not get the vaccine or I may have a blood clot. You know, you can ask Peter Boyles. He got a blood clot. Anything to do with the booster he got? No.
Well, I don't mean to laugh, but no, I mean, this is true. And I think, Dr. Donnie, you're absolutely right. The saddest part seems to be how many younger people are dying or being permanently harmed, and they still won't investigate it because you know the liability is an issue there. So we're going to talk more about that, though, because I think there's a lot, not just so much COVID in the vaccine anymore, but sort of
I think it's a world change. I think yep. it alerted everybody to hate the World Economic Forum, because it has been, they're all getting together and they're a little snooty and all that. We don't like it. But now everybody kind of goes, that organization ought to be nuked.
That's right. Yeah, and Bill Gates and all his pharmaceutical interests too. So that's going to do it for us. Thank you to Randy Corporan. Thank you to everybody on Zoom. Remember, you can catch all of the shows at chuckandjulie.com. Love to have you follow us on Rumble too. We're there. Thanks as always to the great guys at BBS.
And we'll see you Wednesday. Take care. Bye-bye.